Hello and welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. I'm Dr. Squee. This is my show. This week we've got a great interview for you. I spoke with Ross Mullen. Now this is one which we recorded quite early on in lockdown. It was recorded on Facebook Live and it was, it was one of the very early interviews I did on Facebook Live. So one of the very early video ones. Hadn't quite cracked getting the audio as crisp as I'd like it. It's a very easy listen, don't get me wrong, it's not kind of incoherent, but I think we've increased the audio quality since then, so I apologize that it's not quite up to the snuff which I would have it at. But it was a really great chat. Ross Mullen, for anyone who doesn't know, has been in Doctor Who, Game of Thrones, Bear Behaving Badly, for the kids out there, and he was the evil number taker on... the show slipped my mind, but he's done some kids TV as well as some wonderful genre TV, and he's done some stage work. We get into all of it. It's really, really wonderful guy. I've known him for a few years. I first met him when I was doing my Doctor Who podcast, Gallifrey Stands, and we kind of became friends. We kind of see each other at these events. We have a good time. And, you know, yeah, he's great. You know, my girlfriend Nicola was very pleased when she first met him. And I explained that he was one of the White Walkers from Game of Thrones. And she danced with him to Cher. And she was just amazed by that, that she got to dance with the White Walker. So I was very pleased to be able to give her that experience. But Ross is just, he's just one of the nicest guys. He gives us a lot of poetry reading in here, which is nice. At the beginning of lockdown, I wanted to give some positivity back out there. So I got a few of my guests to do special readings and stuff. Apologies for the background noise while I'm recording this intro. It's a very nice, hot, sunny day, so I've had to keep the windows open. And by the way, happy Father's Day to all the dads out there and everyone who was celebrating this weekend just gone. For me, a big shout out to my dad, no longer with us, Mr. Roger Shaw. Still missed after all these years. Was a great guy. Yeah, the other thing I want to shout out before we get into the show is, a couple of things. First of all, my friend and former guest on the show, Matt Lees, has now got a radio show. It's on SW20, which is a South Wales radio station. But he's also available. If you get the SW20 app, which I've now got on my phone, you can listen to him every Monday from 9 to 11 and every Thursday 9 to 11. And it's wonderful. So pleased to hear him back on the radio. He was a DJ back in Canada before he moved back to the UK. So he was originally born in Wales, moved over to Canada, and he came back. And he hasn't done any DJing since. And hearing him doing this for the first time, because I know his music, but I've never heard him DJ before the last couple of weeks, it's really great to hear someone doing what they were obviously meant to do. He is wonderful in the show. Listen to it. Enjoy the tunes. Enjoy the chat. And take part. For me personally, I'd like to direct you towards our Twitch channel. So it's twitch.tv/DrSquee. And if you're on Twitch, please follow us. Please subscribe on there. We've just done a couple of interviews, which will be exclusive there for the time being. They will go on our Facebook Live page and also on podcast later. But one of them was with Death in Gloria, who is a very wonderful singer and songwriter. And with Dame Baptiste, the fantastic comedian. So please follow us there. We want to put our stuff up a few different places to attract different audiences, but we want to take you guys with us, so please subscribe all those places, and of course subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcatcher or at drsquee.com. But those are the shout outs. That's a little bit of a blurb about Matt's new radio show and a bit about my wonderful guest this week. Now I'm going to hand you over to my interview with Mr. Ross Mullen.
Welcome to the show with your friend and mine. So tell me, Dr. Squee, who's it gonna be this time? We like to hear you talk, and we love to hear you listen. And if you are not subscribed, you won't know what you're missing. So welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. And the phone's up. Here we go.
Welcome to the Dr. Squee Show. Tonight, Squee welcomes
Ross Mullen.
And now here's the man himself, Dr. Squee.
welcome Facebook Live to another edition of the Dr. Squee Show. I'm Dr. Squee, this is my show. Joining me this, I was going to say this week, but it's like today, whenever it is. He's been in Doctor Who, Game of Thrones, Clash of the Titans, Nev the Bear, like Bear Behaving Badly for the kids out there, the Doctor Who proms, the list goes on. Please welcome Mr. Ross Mullen.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very well. How are you, Ross?
I'm good. I'm in my bedroom.
How are you coping with life at the moment?
Pretty good. I mean, at first it was really rocky because I'm an extrovert, you know, I'm out socializing all the time. I love the pub. I love going out. So at first it was a little bit rocky for me. But now I'm kind of hunkering down and I'm enjoying a bit of me time. My cat's loving it. I love being with my cat. I'm watching a lot of Real Housewives catch up. I'm getting on with it. And hey, I'm cleaning my room. That's something. I haven't done that for ages.
Okay, a cat. We've got catching up Desperate Housewives. I mean, was there any clue to you being gay anywhere along the way? I'm just wondering. are you playing any share by any chance?
Oh, well, I have my share playing cards right here. I came very equipped for the apocalypse. I've got my share playing card.
You're outdoing yourself, sir.
Each card is a different type of share, really. It's quite cool.
Really? Oh, come on, show us. This is exciting.
It's really cool, yeah. Look. Share. 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 It just goes on and on.
I don't think it's come out on the TV, but I can guarantee anyone listening that those were different shares there. Oh, that's awesome. I love that. Where did you find share playing cards?
Strangely, my flatmate picked out a really beautiful card for me off the internet a couple of years ago. And I said, where did you get that gorgeous drawing of Cher? And he pointed me in the direction of a guy called Ink Java, who's actually from my hometown, Montreal. And I went on his Twitter feed and talked to him. He was coming out with a set of playing cards of Cher playing cards. So I bought two decks. You can never just buy one.
Of course.
One on the side.
I think you need two decks just for all the looks that Cher's rocked over the years as well, surely.
Exactly. I would think so, definitely.
It's great. Oh, by the way, you mentioned your cat. Big love to Parsnip the cat there. How is he doing?
Parsnip. Yeah, I wonder where she is. I've closed my door, so she's not allowed in, but I might hear her scratching. I might have to get up and let her in a minute.
Sorry, I missed Parsnip there. Sorry, she, of course.
She, yes. She's a she.
Oh, and Nicola's just waiting, saying, Ross Mullen is awesome, so big hi from Nicola to you.
Hey, Nicola?
Nicola, yeah, you met her at CovCon. You were dancing to Cher together. Yeah, actually, it goes back to Cher again. You guys danced to Cher at CovCon, night out.
What song was that? If I can turn back time?
Believe, I think it was.
Ah, do you believe in life after life? Love it.
Awesome. So we're going to talk all about you and your illustrious career, sir. And you, I meant to ask you this before we went on, but as ever the professional that I am, but did you manage to find a little reading for us today?
I have. I've got something right here for you.
Awesome. So let's take us through part of your career, then we'll have the reading, then we'll go through the rest, okay?
Okay, sure.
So Ross, how did it all start with you, growing up in Montreal, like getting into acting?
I wanted to be an actor since I was about 5 years old. In fact, I actually wanted to be on Scooby-Doo. That was really what I wanted. I wanted to be, you know, a cartoon character. But my mom would always say, like, you can't be a cartoon character, but you can be an actor. I wanted really to be a monster, actually, in Scooby-Doo. So I hummed and hawed and decided I'd become an actor and pestered my parents for acting lessons. They put me into a school called Children's Theatre in Montreal, which is the same school that William Shatner went to when he was a child.
Nice.
And I studied there from the age of 13 till I was about 16. And then I went to John Abbott College, which was a drama school. And then I went to Ryerson in Toronto. And I kind of excelled as a physical theater actor, more or less. And when I left drama school, I started working mostly in mask theater at Odyssey Theater in Ottawa. And then I moved to the UK in 91 and trained with Henson. Really? I trained with Kevin Clash, actually, who played Elmo on Sesame Street. And I became a Muppeteer, so I learned my puppeteering skills there. Then I gave that up because I was a bullshit young guy. And I went.
Just slow you down a bit, Russ, because you're going over like. I mean, that's a really big break to get to Jim Henderson. Like, you know, was it or in his organization? So sure. Was that off the back of stuff you'd done in Canada, or was it just kind of came over here and you go, I'm going to be a Muppeteer now? It's just
well, weirdly, it was almost like that. I answered an ad in the newspaper. They were looking for Muppeteers. They were still running their Camden Creature Shop, and. I just kind of like thought, hey, I'd love to kind of go along and see, you know, and I actually turned out to be not bad at puppeteering. We work with reverse scan, so it's kind of a technique of being able to watch the puppet on screen, which is on the floor, and a little bit like patting your head and rubbing your belly at the same time. And I kind of excelled at it, and they trained me up as a Muppeteer for quite a few weeks, almost about a month and a half. And I mean, I didn't enjoy it hugely, which is the thing. So I left, and then I started touring, doing musicals with the American Drama Group, all over Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, touring musical productions of David Copperfield, Gulliver's Travels, Christmas Carol, Sherlock Holmes. And then when I came back, I got cast as Dinosaur, in Dinotopia. They were starting out as, like, it was the early stages of motion capture. And Marco Brambilo, who was from Montreal, actually, got in touch with my agent and asked me if I would go to Pinewood and talk over doing this role, which was being voiced by Lee Evans. But they needed someone to be in the film, like, as the dinosaur called Zippo, who was one of the lead roles. So I helped motion capture kind of that role for about, I guess, 7 months.
I mean, the way you tell it, it's like these jobs just appeared. Like, you know, how did you hustle for all this?
I audition-ish. I mean, that one did kind of just appear. I was just asked to go out to Pinewood and meet with him. And I think he had seen me at Odyssey Theatre doing my mask work in Ottawa, or he'd seen my work somehow, or heard about me. I don't know, but anyway,
it just seems like it's kind of like if you saw in a film, you wouldn't believe this stuff. It's like, oh, I just came to London and then saw an advert to be a Muppeteer, then I just got called up to be in Dinotopia, which was a big deal at the time, because as you say, it was using some frontier technology. It's magical.
Yeah, it is kind of magical. Wait till I tell you how I was cast in Sharknado 5. it is kind of funny. There's a certain serendipity about a lot of jobs, you know? Things just, I don't know, like, things just kind of happen for a reason, I suppose. I don't know. It's odd.
It's awesome. Sorry, I broke your train of thought. So, yeah, you're on Dinotopia. Okay.
But, yeah, so I worked on Dinotopia for about 7 months. I got to work with some great actors like Alice Krieg, who was the Borg Queen in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Among many, many other things that she's done. She's a fantastic actress.
Yeah, but as she said, you don't be that entrance where she was kind of lowered from the ceiling and put onto the other part of her body and just went, voila.
Oh, yeah, she's amazing. Yeah, we used to share a car to the studio every day. It was really cool. I worked with Wentworth Miller, who went on to do Prison Break. He was one of the leads in it. I worked with Jim Carter from Downton Abbey and many other things. He's fantastic. David Thewlis, who is brilliant. Yeah, a lot of Colin Salmon, really good actors. And that was really my first filming kind of job.
Was Dinotopia, was that a Spielberg one? Or am I even misremembering?
No, it was Hallmark, actually.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I very much misremembered then.
Remember Hallmark? I don't know if they still do movies. I'm sure they do.
Yeah, I believe so, but not usually on the Dinotopia kind of side of things.
Yeah, Dinotopia was a crazy sort of miniseries based on, like, a world that was Well, basically, it was a miniseries based on a series of portraits that this artist had drawn or conceptualized of a world where dinosaurs, like a land where dinosaurs and people live together, cohabit together, and some of the dinosaurs speak, they work together, some of them are librarians, which is like the one I played. It was quite beautiful, actually. The miniseries then went on to have a television series, a regular television series, which I didn't participate in, but the miniseries was a lot of fun to make. It was, at that time, Pinewood's biggest set they'd ever had. They recreated Waterfall City, which was the city it took place in. It was really beautiful and magnificent experience.
And you said you were doing the puppet for Lee Evans. So did you do it, and was he there on set? Did you do it to a voice
track? No, he had recorded all his lines, and basically I had to learn the text so that when they were filming, I was dressed as a dinosaur. I wasn't puppeteering. I was dressed as a dinosaur. Oh. But the head of the dinosaur was like a thing that I would hold on my hand and sort of make it kind of like... It's so crazy when I think about it. I'm trying to tell you how it was to work on that. It was so odd.
And also, I can imagine just trying to do a visual performance of Lee Evans, kind of like a full pelt. Like, must have been...
Yeah, it was weird. I had to kind of learn his lines and kind of get his rhythm down. And then what they would do is they would do three takes, you know, which they still kind of do with motion capture. They would do, like... a take with me in it. They would call it the Zippo take. That was the character's name, Zippo. They got the Zippo take. So there would be a take done with me in the shot, and then a hero shot, which was done without me in it, but I'd have to say the lines off screen. And then another shot with just sticks and balls, you know, like little balls and sticks where the character would be. So it was quite painstaking, you know. It was quite a long sort of shoot, really. But it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I really enjoyed it a lot. Yeah.
That's wonderful. So what came up next? Like, I like this kind of...
That?
Job by job.
Gosh. Then I puppeteered a giant in Theatre Royal Haymarket in Leicester Haymarket. I puppeteered a giant in The Selfish Giant by Oscar Wilde.
The Gubby.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
And it was a giant puppet that was bigger than me, and it was strapped onto my waist, and I puppeteered his arms and his legs. Really beautiful. Really, really beautiful story. And that was for little kids, like really, really tiny, tiny little kids. They would come into the garden. I don't know if you know the story, but it's a selfish giant.
I did it at school. I loved it.
Yeah, he doesn't want to share his garden. And the little kids, it was like a sort of interactive. They would come in and they would sit in the garden, and I would come and chase them all away. And Spring was a character, and she would kind of help the kids hide from me. It was a beautiful story, and it's also, you know, I don't know if you remember it, but at the end the giant dies. So it's a beautiful story about the loss of life and change and the changing of the seasons. And so it's a great story for kids to really understand aging and death, which is a part of life. I did that. That was 2001. I did a little bit of theater then in between. I think I toured a production of Christmas Carol and Sherlock Holmes. And then around 2005, I got cast in Smile on live television on BBC. Kirsten O'Brien and Barney Harwood. Yeah. And I was puppeteering Nev the Bear, who I have here. Nev the Bear.
Nev's there! Oh my god, I feel like we get two celebrities for one. Can you...
You do get to listen to this. Did you hear that?
I did indeed. And
Can't scare me! So I did Smile for about a year, and then we got a spin-off series, Fair Behaving Badly. I had my own show. Like, it was so crazy.
It started off as the little interstitials, show. Then went on to the program.
Pardon?
So it started off as the little sketches on Smile, and then went into the full program.
Yeah, the premise of the program, like, here I've been working with Barney and Kirsten for a year. The premise of the show is that Barney Harwood played himself, basically, in the TV show. And we were you know, roommates, and he looked after me. And during the day, he would go out and be a TV presenter, and I would stay home and get up to like tons of mischief, you know, and you know, making. I remember one we were making. We made loads of iced buns out of toothpaste, which is like so disgusting. There was crazy, crazy episodes. There was an Alice in Wonderland episode where the whole place flooded. Got to work with Bella Ember. Do you remember Bella Ember?
No.
She passed away a couple of years ago. She was amazing and comedian. Really, really brilliant. So got to work with her on the show.
And like with these kids shows, and especially probably while you're doing Smile, I know they're going to get like loads of the celebrities of the time to come on those shows. Like, do you remember some of the ones which you got to do like sketches with?
Sorry, you kind of broke up there.
Oh, sorry, just on the kids' TV shows, I'm just remembering how they kind of like always have all the celebrities of the time coming on. Was there any of that? Yeah. Did you get to any sketches with anyone that you remember?
Oh, yes, we had like, Jason Donovan, I think, was on.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
We had quite a few. Yeah, we had like a lot of animals coming on. We had a whole season where we did like cows and, and loads of rabbits. I remember a frog that wouldn't do what it was told. yeah, it was crazy. Those are crazy years, man. And in the middle of it all, I did Clash of the Titans, which is going to lead me to all my other work, really.
Yes, you are a female soothsayer, I believe.
Yes, I was the tall, beautiful, moderately overweight witch who, you know, was quite beautiful. Well, she had no eyes, of course. But when I auditioned for Clash of the Titans, I was actually up for the role of the Djinn Warrior, which eventually was played by Ian White, who's much, 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 much taller than me. He's like 7'1". I'm 6'4". So when I went in, they said to me, listen, we'd love you to audition for the Djinn Warrior, but we think we're going to give it to somebody else. But we have one, like, we're thinking of casting men to play the witches. Would you like to audition to play one of the witches in Clash of the Titans? So I said, sure. They said, we're looking for something hideous. We're looking for something scary. We're looking for something sexy. We're looking for something funny. But we don't have a script. And I just said, you know, okay, so what do you want me to do? They said, well, if we put the camera on, can you just kind of improvise? So I did my hideous, sexy, funny, blind witch acting.
Well, which who doesn't have one of those characters in their pocket? Who doesn't have one of those characters? Who doesn't have one of those characters just in their back pocket? Sexy, funny, evil witch. I mean, one-eyed witch. Yeah, everyone's got one of those. Acting 101. Yeah.
And I got the role.
Can you give us a first?
And then, after that, we're leading up to where we're going to. With Clash of the Titans, it was very difficult. It was a very hard shoot. I was overheating on set. It was very, very hot. Richard Zanuck was our executive producer. Thankfully, he stepped in and really saved the day. Got the studio cooled down, made sure we were iced and we could all work again. But after that, I decided, you know what? I am never doing another prosthetic job again as long as I live. I thought I was going to die. It was so hot and I couldn't see anything. And it was hours and hours of makeup. But the makeup team, Connor O'Sullivan's makeup team, they got in touch with me, I guess, about a year after that and said, would you consider doing another creature role? We are looking for someone to play a character on a TV show called Game of Thrones. So I was a bit like, oh, I don't know. I was like, oh, no. They said, just come down, meet with us, hear us out, and we'll show you the character and talk you through it again, you know, basically like they did with Witch. So I went down, showed up for my audition, and I think I went to Nina Gold's office and I said, I'm here for King of Thrones. And they were like, oh, it's Game of Thrones. And I was like, oh, it's a game? I thought it was a TV show. And they're like, no, it is a TV show. It's like this amazing TV show. And I'd never heard of it, of course. So my audition, well, they showed me loads of pictures and things, you know, of their concept of the White Walker. Lots of sketches, photographs of warriors all over the world, from Africa and South America and America. Beautiful concept. And again, they just said the character is very mysterious, steals babies. You know, can you kind of improvise something?
When you went in, when you went in at that stage, like, did at any point in that meeting it hit you how, like, expansive this was going to be? Because it sounds like when you were going in, you didn't have any idea, as no one would, just hearing the title.
Yeah, I had no idea. I had really no idea what they kind of wanted. I just kind of went in blind. You know, I just kind of improvised. Pretended there was a baby on the floor, pretended I was going to do something awful to it. And they liked it. Then they asked me if I could horseback ride, which I can't. And then they offered to send me out on lessons, which I very much said I would love to do. So then I did Game of Thrones for 3 seasons, seasons 2, 3, and 4. I'm that White Walker. And from that, pretty much I got Doctor Who, I would think. Yeah.
So with Game of Thrones, when it starts going out, like, was it just when it hit TV? When did you get an idea of, as say, how enormous this kind of world was?
Well, I guess I mean, the first thing was, once I got the role, I started watching the show, obviously, to kind of catch up and see what it was about. And once I started watching it, I thought, wow, this is actually a really good show. When I saw the season finale, I was really blown away. But what I know, you know, what I very much noticed was there was no other character like my character in the structure of this story. So I knew it would have some sort of impact. They also told me, you're going to be the season finale of season 2. So once I saw the season finale of season 1, I thought, this is quite important, obviously. It's quite a big deal for them, yeah? So accent. Don't scare me! So once it started airing, you know, season 2, I was like, this is pretty cool. And then, you know, once my episode aired, my social media just kind of went crazy. After that, the rest is history, Ian. The rest is history.
And one thing which I was amazed about, which I've spoken to you about on my old show, is the it's how it kind of looked. I imagined a lot more of it was done kind of CG later, because, like, you got the fluorescent blues and everything, but it was all pretty much there, you said.
It's all pretty much, yeah, it's all makeup. Except for the eyes, the blue eyes that are CGI'd on afterwards. But a testament to the incredible artists and makeup artists who work on that, they are the true stars of this type of work. You know, we were 5 hours in makeup. They're there an hour before I am. So they're there at midnight. I get in at 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, they work with me in the chair until about 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Then we're camera ready. We go down onto set and we shoot for 12 hours, constantly touching me up, you know, and, you know, we finish, I guess, around 6 or 7. It takes about an hour or two to get out of makeup. We all go back to the hotel. We have a glass of wine, a little cry, a little sleep, get up, do it again the next day. And it's a lot of fun, you know, weirdly. It's like, you know, you do everything, you know, it's cool. It's quite good. And, you know, the people who have the best gossip are obviously the people who work in makeup, right?
Yeah.
So they always have to grip the best stories. So spending a lot of time with them isn't difficult.
And, like, just that moment when you stood there at the top of... I don't know how... You see, this is another question of how much is there and how much is put in later, but I get the feeling certain you were there with a big group of people in a big battle kind of scene. Like, how does it feel just to be there in that moment?
Oh, well, I never did really big battle scenes, right? Like, all my stuff was just one-on-one. So it was me and Sam in season 2, and Sam kills me in season 3. Season 4, I come back as a different White Walker and hand the baby over to the Night King, and that's when the Night King first appears. But being on set there is pretty incredible. I mean, it's pretty special. The wonderful thing about being in scenes where there's very few people, it feels like you're quite special, obviously, because, you know, you're pretty much the only one in the scene. If not, maybe there's only one other person. So, but it's a very, very, very big production. It was very big production. It was very slick. It was, you know, really professional, a lot of fun. My director, Michelle McLaren, what an honor to work with her. She was really, really talented and brilliant. She executive produced Breaking Bad, one of my favorite shows. So, you know, I got to work with a lot of really kind of cool people. She's also a fellow Canadian, Michelle McLaren. We're everywhere.
I'm obviously, you see, misremembering. I think because there were so many huge battle scenes, and later on you got more with the White Walkers kind of in big... I imagined you in one of those for some reason.
There are big battle scenes later on. The White Walkers were later then played by mostly stunt guys after season 5, I would say, right. 6. They started using stunt guys wisely, too. You know, I can ride a horse now, but I don't want to be knocked off it. <You know? laughs> I don't want to get my head hurt. Ouch.
Okay, we're going to move on to Doctor Who and some of your work after that in just a moment. But Ross, you mentioned a little reading you were going to be able to do for us today.
Yes.
What are we going to be hearing today?
I'm going to read to you from my favorite poet, Mary Oliver, and it's my favorite poem called Wild Geese.
Okay. I'm going to stand to one side. I'm going to leave you directly with the audience. Please, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ross Mullen.
Wild geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about your despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear petals of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things.
That was lovely. Thank you very much for that. And who's that by?
Mary Oliver. She's an American poet.
Absolutely lovely.
She's fantastic. I read a poem of hers every day.
Oh, that's nice. I think it's nice to add a little bit of art out there in these times. So we have got a quick shout-out from Lucia. I apologise if I mispronounced your name. She says, hello, happy to listen to you. And we've got Matt Lees and Harvey Clark appearing in my feed, listening and watching right now.
You're kind of breaking up a bit.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying that people are viewing at the moment. So if anyone's got any questions for Ross, just put them on the page there and I'll read them out to him.
Cool.
So was it Doctor Who straight after Game of Thrones, or were there some jobs in between?
One more time.
Was it Doctor Who? Was that the next job after Game of Thrones?
Oh, Doctor Who, yes.
Yes.
I came in to do The Silence in Time of the Doctor. Replaced an actor called Mannix, who was playing the role before. And but first, before that, actually, I did Doctor Who Proms, where I played the Ice Warrior. I was replacing Spencer Wilding, who played the Ice Warrior. So they needed someone to fit the suit. That was a really weird casting for that. I got invited to go to the Doctor Who Experience up in Cardiff. They needed to see if I fit the costume.
Yeah.
I went with the costume designer into the museum exhibition after it had closed. We got to the Ice Warriors section, and basically she said to me, okay, I'll just get the costume down. You strip down, you know, to your underwear. So I stripped down my underwear. And then she went, I'm actually struggling to get the costume off of the mannequin that is on, right? I'm going to go and get help. So she left me there in the middle of the Doctor Who experience, surrounded by all the monsters in my underwear.
In the middle of the night.
This is like a really weird situation. I just said, yeah, this is really odd. I felt very vulnerable and exposed. Well, the costume fit. I did Doctor Who proms. Then they offered me the silence, replaced Maddox on that. And then they phoned and they offered me after that to play the teller in Time Heist with Peter Capaldi and Keeley Hawes, who I love. And so they gave me my own kind of monster. It was like, yeah, that's, yeah. So those are my like three big Doctor Who jobs. I went back again and I played a Wraith in Jenna Coleman's last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I did anything else with them. No, I think that's it. Yeah.
First of all, your sister Jean says hi from Canada.
Oh my God. Hi, Jean.
And,
hi, Jean. Love you.
Hey. And like, yeah, the BBC proms, that must have been a fantastic thing to get involved with. And so unique. Like, there's only a couple of times they did those Doctor Who proms.
What was that? Sorry, you kind of broke up there.
Just, I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about working on the Doctor Who proms and being there for such a spectacular as that.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so Doctor Who proms. Yeah, I would say that the Doctor Who proms was definitely like my share moment. Hear me out. Basically, when I got to the Royal Albert Hall, they explained to me that I would be arriving through the floor of the center of the Royal Albert Hall in a block of ice with dry ice smoke floating out of it. And then I'd break out of this ice and I'd walk into the crowd scaring and terrifying them all. It was as close to being Cher as I thought it could possibly be. People loved it. It was crazy. But like I said to you, the costume fit. Well, it kind of fit, yes. Spencer's a lot bigger than me, so I could fit the costume and I could walk in it. But I told them in rehearsal, listen, like I could walk in this suit, but you know, what I cannot do is walk downstairs in it, right? And they went, oh, don't worry. We're not going to ask you to walk downstairs in it. Well, of course, when I broke out of the ice, there was a staircase I had to walk down. So I had to kind of lean against the banister and sort of slide my way down the steps. Because, you know, the ice warrior wouldn't hold onto the handrail, I didn't think, you know.
Well, yeah.
It just seemed really odd. So I was kind of like going, and sort of sliding down the steps.
See, this is a professional here. Even when you can't see what you're doing, you're still trying to keep in character.
Just one sec. Your device will restart to update outside your activity hours.
What can I say, folks? This is live.
Yes, I just don't want my computer is like going, I think we're going to restart. Do not do that.
Before we went on, I realised my iPad was about to die, so it's currently plugged in. I had to run around and do that, so I understand.
Yeah, the proms was great. And they actually invited me back the following year to work at the proms, but it wasn't a Doctor Who proms. But I did work with Dan Starkey, who was big on Doctor Who.
Yeah, Strax.
We worked together. He was playing, like, I forget what it was a kid's thing. I was playing a troll, and he was like a troll hunter. So it was really odd. But, yeah, so I played the Royal Albert Hall twice in my life.
Woo!
Once as the Ice Warrior and once as a troll, as you do. I loved working on Doctor Who, though. Another fantastic crew, real professional bunch. Lot of fun. The costumes didn't take as long there. They were more like masks and costumes, animatronic heads. So I wasn't in makeup for hours and hours and hours for those. So that was a bit of a blessing. But I had a lot of fun. Made some really good friends on that show. And I got to work with two doctors, right? Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi.
That's not bad at all. And plus, actually, I'm sensing a theme. Like, one of the episodes, the Doctor dies. The other episode, the Companion dies. Like, you know, should we be watching out for this when you appear in an episode? The Teller, there was a lot of death in that one.
Oh, just one second. Sorry. Alexa, stop. I don't know. Something triggered my Alexa. Alexa, stop. That's weird. She's trying to reveal my secrets.
Yeah.
So what were you saying? Yeah, I work with two doctors. Matt was amazing, but I worked with Matt on his very last episode. So it was quite special, that.
Yeah.
Very special. And also sort of really melancholic for him, I think, you know. I can't speak for him, but yeah. When I worked with Peter, it was a very different energy, you know. Peter actually came to my trailer when I first came on set and knocked on my door. And I thought it was, you know, somebody from production asking if I wanted a cup of tea or something. And there was Peter Capaldi. And he just said, hey, I just wanted to welcome you onto the show. And my partner and I are really big Game of Thrones fans. So we love you as the White Walker. And I was like, oh, cool. Thank you. Yeah, both amazing doctors, I thought.
Yeah.
I would love to work with this current doctor. Putting it out there.
Yeah, come on, come on. Ross and Jody, why isn't this happening already?
Hello, that should happen. Hello.
Well, moving off the Doctor here now. Another job which just jumps off the page to me is Sharknado. Global Swarming, I believe you're in.
Yes, yeah. Sharknado 5, Global Swarming.
You said there was an interesting story about getting onto that job as well.
So I got a message on Facebook Messenger. hi, I'm one of the producers of Sharknado movies. Do you know them? And I was like, yeah. And he said, well, we're looking for anybody from Game of Thrones who's willing to be in Sharknado. And I was like, hey, look no further. I will go to the opening of an envelope and you pay me. And so I gave them my details, and lo and behold, I was on Sharknado 5, Global Swarming. Yeah, I mean, for me it was, oh God, what's going on? Something's popping up. Okay, sorry. For me, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, cool. Yeah, for me it was really cool because, you know, I'm a big reality TV buff, right? And in my scene, I'm working with Dance Mom, Abby Lee Miller from Dance Moms. She's,
right.
She plays one of my assistants. And
because you're the head scientist.
In it. Pardon?
You're the head scientist.
I'm a scientist, yeah. She's a scientist as well.
Yeah.
When I die, she says, everyone's replaceable, which is her tagline in Dance Moms, which she always says to the kids, everyone's replaceable. So in my household, you know, my flatmate, he's like, Game of Thrones, who cares? Doctor Who, so what? Sharknado 5, he was like, now you've made it. Now you have made it. yeah, it was pretty cool. Like, I'm in the same movie as Olivia Newton-John. She's in it. I think she plays a scientist. So is Nichelle Nichols from Star Trek. Yeah, it's pretty cool being in the Sharknado franchise. I loved it. And I loved working with the heroes, you know, Ian Ziering, Tara Reid. Like, they were all so cool to work with. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Just a couple of days shooting.
And a mighty fine suit you got to wear as well in that.
Yeah, a really tight suit. A really tight 60s suit that I could barely sit down in, I have to say. But, you know, I think it just made it for the two-day shoot. But I also got to... I was sat next to Katie Price in makeup, you know? Katie Price?
Yeah, Jay Jordan.
Okay, so my Katie Price story is this. I come in, I'm going into makeup, and it's my dressing room, and they said, hope you don't mind, you know, you have to share our makeup, because we're, you know, we're short of space. Katie Price is in there now. You'll be sharing it with her. So I was like, oh, cool. You know, I walk in through the door, and I go, oh my God, it's Katie Price. And she goes, oh my God, it's Ross Mullen. So I sit down and we're talking, and she goes, would you mind, because I'm shooting my reality television show, would you mind signing a little piece of paper saying that, you know, you don't mind being on the show? And I was like, sure, I'll do that. Absolutely. And then she said, could you do me another favor? And I was like, what was that? And she said, well, you know, when you came in and you went, oh my God, it's Katie Price. She said, we didn't really catch that. Can you go and do it again? So I was like, you don't even have to ask. Of course. I went out, I came back in, I was like, oh my God, it's Katie Price.
Did you hammer it up more this time?
I don't know if it made it to the cut. I didn't watch Chasing Katie or whatever it was called, but,
but did you
think it was pretty cool I was in makeup with Katie Price.
Did you feel the need the second time to go even bigger? Oh my God, it's Katie Price!
I did. I made it, like, I think three times as big. Yeah, it was pretty cool. She was really nice, actually. I really liked her.
And I believe there's a very, well, I know because you've told me before, that there's a wonderful story about your death scene in Sharknado.
Oh, yeah. Just throwing myself against the door endlessly. And then, they had like two stunt guys holding the door, you know, because I was throwing my entire weight against it as a shark attacks me. And then, of course, costume came over, or, you know, wardrobe came over, and they just said, well, every time you throw yourself against the door, just so you know, your midriff comes up, you know, your shirt lifts. Do you want us to tape it down? We can kind of tack it down to your trousers. And I said, don't worry about it, because they're just going to CGI an enormous shark over my body, and you won't even see my midriff. Well, of course, when it comes out, the shark that attacks me is only, like, maybe this big, and it's, like, drilling into my chest. So my belly is hanging out in the scene. If you watch it, you'll see my little belly, my big belly, hanging out.
Yeah, I believe that shark was the basis for the song Baby Shark.
What was that?
I said, I believe that shark was the basis for the song Baby Shark.
I would imagine that was. I didn't get my royalty check, unfortunately. But,
taking up...
Is that that song?
Yeah. Baby Shark,
something like that.
And you're welcome. You're welcome, anyone watching, for that being stuck in your head for the rest of the day.
Yeah, like I think somebody played it the other day, and I was like, oh my God.
So a bit more recently, you've been on Play. It was A Pocket Full of Bread. Am I got the title right?
Oh yeah, Pocket Full of Bread. I'm producing a short film based on a play I did last year. Well, 2018, actually. It's a Romanian piece. It's on hold right now, but we will be back in production soon. As soon as this, you know, has all lifted, this coronavirus has sort of left our ways of life. We're scouting around to find a landscape for it, and it will be, we've got a really amazing screenplay version of it. It's shortened down to 15 minutes. And then I'm also doing a movie called The Wretched, which is a vampire film. And that's on hold as well. And it's a fantastic play about it's a fantastic movie about a vampire who has not fed for a very, very, very long time. It's quite romantic and beautiful and very violent too.
Sounds wonderful. You mentioned the virus there. Now, obviously, it's hit a lot of actors and people in the arts quite heavily.
Yes.
What do you think, personally, of the measures they've brought in place? They've just been announced the other day to help actors. Do you think they go far enough? Do you think it's kind of a good package?
Yes, I do think it's a great package. I think the government have really stepped up and done fantastic things. I would love it if they would step up a little bit further and help people like smaller companies who've made themselves limited. This has not affected myself, but for people who run smaller companies, including actors, sometimes they make themselves limited companies. they seem to have fallen into a loophole. Now, what it seems to be, though, with the government is that, it's the same with self-employed, they seem to every week kind of readdress people who have fallen through the loopholes. So I'm hoping that next week the Chancellor will announce something for this loophole. I certainly have signed petitions, and I made my, you know, my MP aware of it. Fingers crossed. I think, you know, I mean, listen, our instruction is pretty simple. Just stay at home. It's a big ask for any government in anywhere, and, you know, and it's happening all over the world, for leaders to have to ask us to just basically stay at home. And they have to support us. They have to, you know, help us. I think there may be some plus sides to this. You know, homeless people have been given shelter here. there's a lot of plus things. I think it's very, in some ways, really beautiful that the whole world has stopped to let our healthcare workers and the most important people of society take care of the most vulnerable people at this time. So it's we're living through something incredible. I mean, I hear the word unprecedented every day, practically. We are living in an unprecedented time. I just urge everyone to stay at home and wash their hands. Stay healthy. Stay away from the A&E or the, you know, emergency rooms. They don't need you at the hospital, so take care of yourself at home. You know, don't, if you're doing DIY, just as long as you know what you're doing, don't fall down and break your leg. They don't need you there, you know. So just sit, stay home and stay safe.
Yeah, and you've hit upon something there, which in your answer there, which kind of I think is very important to highlight. I've highlighted it on like this yesterday as well. But I think it is important to remember, as much as we see these stories of people bulk buying and people doing the wrong thing, there are so many people doing the right thing. There's so many people who are trying to help people out. And there's so much positivity to come out of this. The wonderful moment when we all went outside our door and just gave a clap for the NHS, and you could hear it echoing among the streets. Things like that.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. You know, it was because I live in London and the city is so noisy. So it's been a little creepy to see it so quiet. And that one moment when everybody was yelling and screaming out the window and applauding, it reminded me that in this silence, there is life in our silence. And to not be too afraid of it, we're all at home hoping that this passes quickly and that we don't lose our loved ones. So, you know, my heart goes out to people who have lost people. I met some people when I was in Italy a month and a half ago who have since lost people to this. And so it's vital, it's absolutely integral that we stay in and we listen to what the government is asking us to do at this point in time, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, before we let you go, sir, one thing which I'm doing on this new show is usually asking for some general advice from the people I interview about their field. But I think in these times, what I'm trying to do is get some hope. Like, so what would you put out to people? Like, how are you coping? What's your kind of best advice in these kind of tricky times for everyone?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Have a routine. Okay. My little routine is I get up. I may feel a little down in the morning sometimes. That's kind of the way I am anyway. Have something really nice to do in the morning. Like I feed my cat, which is beautiful. I meditate in the morning. I do say prayers in the morning as well. You know, just a beautiful positive prayer or thought to what you want from the day. It's very easy to in the morning to think a lot of myself and my own woes. I try to put them out of what I would like for the world. So I kind of ask the universe to kind of help those that struggle. And then through the day, I color in my book. I've got a coloring book. I have a little drink. This is Dracula, tequila from Romania.
Nice.
I have a little drink in the evening. I play cards. You know, there's also a lot of pressure to kind of achieve something big. Like I saw this thing going around saying that Shakespeare wrote King Lear when he was in quarantine. You don't have to write King Lear. You know, don't put too much pressure on yourself. Take this time to reflect inwardly. Take this time to watch things you've always wanted to watch on TV. Maybe read, maybe draw, maybe start something, maybe don't finish it. Just don't be hard on yourself, you know? Take it one moment at a time. do a lot of face chats with people, catch up with people you hadn't in a long time. I think a lot of us are doing those things, you know. Eat well, look after yourself, love yourself, ask, you know, think about what it is you like about yourself and how you can better this world once you walk out this door in a few months. And just be grateful. You know, I do gratitude lists every day, and I share them with a friend of mine. So there's so much to do. And when you have nothing else to do, just sit peacefully with yourself and think of what a wonderful thing you're doing by just doing nothing.
That's absolutely lovely, sir. Just before we let you go, just because you happen to have Never the Bear there, could he give a little bit of a message to everyone just to keep them sane?
Where me? Excuse me. Don't scare me.
Hey, that's a really good one.
Don't scare me.
Hey. Don't be scared, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what was the thing they shared with the... when we had the terrorist attack, they shared pictures of people from the World War. Not scared then, not scared now. Let's try and keep that in our hearts. Like, these are things we can't control. Like, of course, when tragedy does strike us because of this virus, yeah, of course, we have to be sad and we have to be as sensible as we can. Fear doesn't help us, though. Just being sensible. I think that's a really good message.
I went into the shop the other day, and it had been a few days that I'd gone in and there wasn't any bread. Every day I'd gone, there was no bread, there was no bread. And then when I went in the other day, there was bread. The whole shop was full of bread. And of course, the first thing I wanted to do was buy more than one loaf of bread and freeze it. I wanted to panic buy, and I resisted. I just thought, I have to think of others. I have to think of somebody else who, I have to think of me 2 days ago when I came in here and there was no bread. So don't panic buy. There's enough for everybody. You know, just think of your neighbors, think of each other, stay strong, keep love in your heart.
And thank you to our guest this week, Ross Mullen. I gave a shout out at the beginning of this episode to my dad for Father's Day just gone, but I neglected, of course, to send out the love to my kids and to my human kids, and as well as my doggy and guinea pig kids, who all spoiled me rotten and gave me a wonderful day with a little bit of assistance by my wonderful fiance Nicola. So thank you to Stuart, Danielle, to Amy, to Dottie and Benny, the dogs and the guinea pigs, Bowie and Mercury. I had a wonderful Father's Day. But that's our show for this week. Thanks again to Ross Mullen. Hope you all enjoyed that. But that was the Dr. Squee Show. I'm Dr. Squee. That was my show.